WTF.com. News Radio 680 WPTF, WPTF.com. Joe Wade, Paul McCullough, and you. Our guest in the studio is Greyzone, and we also have with us Bryce Roberts. And there has been a series running in the NNO now for 4 weeks about doing business in China. And Grace, whose idea was this series, and how did you get involved in it?
Yeah, the editors at the NNO, they talked to me about putting the series together because they get so many questions and interest from the readers about China and wanting advice and information about how they might go about, if they're interested in pursuing relationships with China, U.S.-China bidirectional business. So that's how it came about several months ago.
So they, you know, this China is a big, big topic, obviously. And Bryce, it's a topic because, you know, China owns all our debt. The reality is they own about 25% of it. You know, everybody's, all the jobs are going to China, and we don't have any jobs here, and heck with China. What's wrong with the United States? So, I mean, we've got this problem, so to speak, but we also realize that China's a huge market.
Definitely. Yeah, and to put it some numbers on it, I mean, for North Carolina, the agricultural exports, they're at like $500 million now. This is from like 5 million 10 years ago. I mean, just a huge increase.
Almost this is nowhere. We're exporting to China.
We're exporting. We're making money. You know, we focus on the negative aspects a lot of times. We don't.
Well, that's why we're here
forget.
To kind of clear up some things. Yeah, Grace wanted to do this, and Grace was on with me months ago, and she wanted to wait till the series was on because I said that's a good thing. Let's clear up the negatives. Let's talk about some positive things. We're not here to beat you up. I mean, we're here to try to be informed. Okay. So, giving this again, we're exporting how much to China from this state?
Right, agriculturally, 500 million. So just second behind Japan.
What are we exporting? Tobacco.
Tobacco. Yeah.
What else?
Pork. I mean, Chinese love.
They love pork.
Pork.
Yeah.
We
I
have
do
a lot
too.
Of. We that's a huge industry for us here. So and that's just agriculture. I mean, we our series focus more about kind of local triangle high tech companies.
Right. Right. Yep. We feature 10 different companies, large companies like Duke Energy, Red Hat, Quintiles. And then some smaller companies, some startups, early stage companies, and they're all doing various things with China, and it's helping these North Carolina companies be more successful. For instance, with Cree, that's been featured over the last several weeks, they went from negligible revenues to now they're at 30% of their revenues come from China, and they're lighting up the Olympics in 2008, had a lot of... that kind of catapulted their success in China.
And these are jobs that, you know, are American jobs for the most part. Their technology is being shipped over to China. And China's paying for this?
China is a huge market because they have mandates for energy conservation. So LEDs, the components that Cree manufactures,
right.
And they have huge facilities here right in Durham. They are able to help China meet their mandates for energy conservation. And China is a huge, huge opportunity for people who help with construction because they're growing so, so quickly. And a lot of these infrastructure projects need lighting. And then the Olympics, which the whole world was looking at with the bird's nest and the water cube, Cree had the opportunity to light both of those huge venues up.
So I did see a little bit about that. All right. Okay, so now the series is doing business in China. Now, obviously, the Chinese government is not a capitalistic society, mm-hmm. right? I mean, they're still based in communism, sort of. I mean, you go to Singapore, and I hear it's not anything like communist China. But I guess the focus is now, and we'll ask you, what does it take, really, to build a strong relationship in China? I mean, it's got to be – this ain't like going out here and – you know, you don't operate the same in that culture that you do here. And that's where you guys come in, right? Mm-hmm. This is basically what you know how to do.
Right. So the series in the News and Observer that's running for many weeks, it's based on a white paper that we've researched and written. It's called 10 Steps to Creating a Winning Business or a Successful Business in China.
Okay.
And certainly if your listeners are interested in getting a copy of that, they could certainly write us and we could share that with them. And so there's 10 different steps that we talk about in all our research that we found is very important to being successful in China. Like the first one is simply figuring out your entry strategy, for instance. And then the second.
Now, how do you do that? I mean, you can't, you can't call a Chinese business up because does everything, there's my first question, because we're all dumb here, except you two. I'm the only dummy in the room. You have to deal with the government on everything, right?
Right. And that's our step two, is embrace the government and their policies. And when they speak, listen. And that, for instance, is Cree, for example, they got a call several years ago and this delegation was visiting and they wanted to pay a visit to Cree. And so very luckily for them, they said yes. And that's what started the relationship with some of the government officials and their mandate and realizing that Cree could help them. And then other companies like Burt's Bees, for instance, after they were acquired by Clorox in 2007, one of their strategic initiatives was to go global, more global now that they're a part of a larger entity and they had an established brand. And so they hired a global consulting firm and they identified 30 countries that were of interest. And then China was one of the top priorities for several reasons.
All right, well, let's start with that and join the conversation. Doing business with China, 860-9783. Or toll-free, 800-662-7979. You say that you have to listen to what the government says. You have to. So how does this work when you, do they have to contact you or can you contact them?
Well, for instance, with the case with Cree, they were approached by a visiting
delegation. The Chinese
government.
Okay.
Yep. And for instance, with Burt's Bees, when they started realizing they really were interested in the China market because it was a big opportunity for them with their established product line, they had to figure out from a regulatory standpoint, for instance, how they could get through an issue. They do not do animal testing. That's a very core tenet of Burt's Bees philosophy. And they had to work with 18 different provincial and central government agencies over a two-year period to really listen intently to them to understand how they could work through and work with them to have their products be sold there. So they were approaching them through their government relations people that they had through Clorox and through their legal counsel. So they were proactive at going out and getting these conversations going.
It's got to be frustrating, isn't it, Brian?
It is. And Joe, you mentioned the word relationship, and I think that's the key word. A lot of people think of China business and think about it in a very technical kind of almost mathematical way, but it's more about relationships even than I think business in the U.S. is. And so in the case of Cree, they could maybe, you could say they lucked out a bit. They had people approach them, but Burt's Bees and almost every company going over there, you have to build very real, very tangible relationships with individuals in your sector and in that government agency to get through. And it takes years. It takes, takes a long time, but that's how the Chinese do business. It's very personal kind of relationship.
And never politics is brought up.
Politics is, you know, a lot different from here. And Grace is holding the book Guanxi. And so she's brought this book up a lot in the series and also in a recent event that we did with North Carolina Chinese Business Association. Politics over there is very much a hierarchical, top-down policy kind of thing. Obviously, there's not a two-party system or anything like that.
Yeah, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to talk politics. I mean, you want to go over there and say, so listen, you people are communists, right? We don't want to get into that.
Right. So one of the steps that we talk about in our series is how to learn to communicate culturally. And Bryce brought up the concept of Guanxi in this book that I refer to and actually have made it suggested reading in some of my coursework, like here in the United States, for instance, at UNC and teaching China entry strategies. It's a story about Microsoft's entry into China. And actually, Bill Gates fumbled when he first entered China. He showed up wearing blue jeans. He hadn't researched China. And he was told, ever so politely, that
Get
he
out.
Should come back
yeah.
when he is more ready. You have to understand the culture. You have to build the Guanxi. It's relationships built over many, many, many meetings. Over many meals, for instance. And one of the steps that we talk about, and it's brought up so many times, is about legal and lack of IP protection, for instance. In China, for instance, negotiations start after the contract is signed. So things are very, very different. So it's important to appreciate the differences, study them before you go, and be ready for that.
Does China need us? Don't answer that question. We're going to take a... Think about that, and we'll get back with it. Join the conversation, 860-9783. Toll-free 800-662-7979. The series has been running on the NNO for 4 weeks. Doing business in China. News Radio 680 WPTF. News Radio 680 WPTF, WPTF.com. Joe Wade for McCullough. All right, we're talking about doing business with China. Grace Owen is with us and Bryce Roberts. They're involved with this. There's been a four-week series in the NNO. I asked this question to kind of stimulate some conversation off the air. It says, does China need us? What do they need us for? They seem to be able to make everything themselves. Bryce, how do you answer that question?
China definitely needs us. And when we talk a lot about some of the problems with the imbalances, the trade deficits, or the jobs that are going to China, we look at some stats. I mean, in 1950, the U.S. economy was 45% services. The rest was manufacturing. So that's, you know, an immature economy. Now we're at 80% services. So we're a much more mature economy. Obviously, we know that from 1950.
Well, give me that stat again, because that's an interesting. It's kind of a sad stat in a way. Give me that stat
sure.
again.
It's 45% services. So non-farm. Of non-farm part of the economy, it was services, and the rest is manufacturing, and governments included in that.
We've lost a lot of manufacturing.
Sure. I mean, that was the heyday of GM and,
sure.
and all that. So a lot of that's gone away, but a lot of that is because we've gotten richer. I mean, that was the boom of the middle class, and they had money to spend on services. And so that's 45%. We're at 80% now. China is at 43%. So China, in some ways, we think of them as a modern powerhouse, this huge economy that's growing. But in some ways, they're kind of like behind us in 1950 in many ways in their development, because they know they have to transition into a more services-based economy. But they have to try
well,
to keep
explain
up
that employment. Now, services opposed to manufacturing. I know what manufacturing is all about. I mean, in the heyday after World War II, I mean, the entire industrial might of the world was destroyed. We're the only ones that had infrastructure.
Exactly.
We destroyed Germany. We destroyed England. We destroyed Japan. We became the biggest thing on the world because we knew how to do everything. We didn't bomb it out. So that's the manufacturing part. Where is China now?
So they're at 43% now, and so
manufacturing or services.
43% services. So they're slightly a majority is still in manufacturing.
And explain services now.
So services are just any kind. I mean, medical services, I think, makes
okay,
up.
Okay, medical, that makes
you know,
sense. Okay.
You know, health, that's huge for us. I think we have like three times the amount of health as a percentage of that services number over China.
So they don't have enough doctors, hospitals, nurses. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, definitely. I mean, education. You know, we're looking at the top 100 schools, and I think China only has 3 schools that are in their top 100
they
universities.
They seem to be very educated, though, Grace.
Well, a lot of them are coming here. They want to come to school. Education is huge. We talked about it on the Tiger Mom show several months ago.
Yeah, I mean.
So, well, but there's 1.3 billion people in China. So we see a lot of people here because the best of the best are able to come here. And
the ones that can afford to come.
Well, it's afford, right. And then to score high enough and get in, qualify for admissions. So it's very, very, very competitive because there's so many people vying for not enough slots. And so that's created a new opportunity here in America to create educational opportunities. A lot of these people have money to pay the entire bill, which can help some of our state universities.
Yeah, because we have a problem right now with our kids not being able to afford college, but it seems that the foreigners that are coming over, they got a checkbook.
Right. So the
and
best,
they're letting them in.
Right. Well, the best of the best can come in, the ones that are able to financially and those that are able to score well enough to make the bar.
Okay.
Cut the bar.
All right, Bryce, I took you off track there, but
no,
get back
fine.
On it.
No, that's fine. But that, like Grace said, that's a way where that's where China needs us. We have the best educational infrastructure in the world, and China has a rising middle class, and they want to get in on that. So we have infrastructures in place. We have advanced medical technologies. We have a lot of the innovation skills that China lacks. And so it's we're not at the point yet where everything's going to be outsourced to China, and all of a sudden we're just going to be stuck here. I mean, we have
well,
we
that,
still
that wouldn't
have
be well for all of us.
No,
so,
right.
you know, it's not a good
right.
thing.
And we talked a little bit at the Tiger Mom talk show about the differences in education. For instance, Bryce just touched on the innovation, and with the passing of Steve Jobs, for instance, recently, I think there was discussion about how innovation really comes from here in America, in the Chinese system of education is more rote and rigid and doesn't necessarily allow free thinking. So a lot of people realize that America has been successful in innovation because of the way students are educated.
Is that because of their communist government? Or
I think it goes beyond that. For instance, when my parents, they escaped China when the communists came, and I think the way that they were schooled was still like that. But Bryce, maybe you can speak, since you spent 6 years in China. What did you observe?
Sure. My background is, I did a degree in Asian studies at Appalachian and lived there for 6-7 years. So
where did you live in China, Bryce?
I lived in Shanghai for 2 years and Suzhou, which is just next to that.
Now, Shanghai, they tell me this is like, that's where everybody wants to go. There's a lot of American young students there, like big financial district. It's doesn't seem like it's a communist place at all. It's just like everybody's having a great time.
No. Yeah, Shanghai is, you know, the financial capital of the country, and you wouldn't recognize it.
Yeah, I say that it's...
I have friends of mine. Yeah. Their kids work there.
Sure.
They live there.
Yeah.
They love
yeah.
it.
Parts of it are like Paris on steroids. That's what I say, because it's parts of it are really cool. So Shanghai, certainly, in Beijing, there are two huge cities that are very metropolitan, but there's so much of the rest of China that's... Tier one, tier two. And when we help companies that are going interested in China or trying to improve their performance in China, you can't just look at those two cities, the tier one cities. You have to have a strategy for tier one, tier two, tier three, because China is such a huge geography and expansive geography, and every region is really different. So you can't treat China like one big mass of everyone's the same. People are very, there's a lot of different types of Chinese people in China.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of like this country a little bit, too. I'm the only Yankee living in my house, you know, so they don't care
for me. But it's more extreme.
I'm sure it is.
It's very diverse. And that's a sense I want to give people, is that it's the options, the opportunities are almost endless. I mean, another stat I can throw is 38% of the labor force is in agriculture over there. We're at 1% here, and it's highly mechanized, and we have a greater output than all of China. And yet 38% of their 850 million person labor force is still, they're still peasants, basically.
What is an American young student going over there and you're living in Shanghai? What do they think of Americans?
They, you know, contrary to a lot of what we think, that we think there's some diabolical plan.
Because we think everybody in the world hates us.
Right, we do. They are in awe. You know, they are very friendly to Americans overall. I only had one barber who spent 30 minutes cutting my hair complaining about everything America ever did. But besides that experience, I had a great time.
We're not perfect either.
Yeah,
you know.
Sure. And that, you know, that's his opinion. That's fine. They are very open. They're very friendly. I mean, we'll see how it goes with the NBA lockout or whatever. But all they want to do is talk to you about NBA, about Hollywood, about Lady Gaga. You know, they are in awe of the culture and of the accomplishments.
Well, we have certainly exported entertainment to the world.
Yes.
I mean, we are. I mean, England does a pretty good job of it, too. But so do we. And I understand that part of it. I mean, everybody wants to, everybody wants to leave. I mean, you go to Japan and you're a singer. You're mobbed. You could be a third-rate country singer here, and you go to Japan, you're like a hero.
Sure.
So, I mean, I understand that part of it. And I just, you know, it's interesting to me because get a kind of a perception of what people think about us. I mean, because we just think that, you know, we're tired of bailing everybody out. We're tired of being the police, everybody. We're tired of being everybody's war. We're tired of losing jobs to every country, not just China and every place else. So right now, we're not a bunch of happy campers in this country, but we understand, and I think we have to understand, that it is a global world. And if they can help us and things get better for the United States by doing business in India, China, Pakistan, wherever, let's do it, but let's find the right way to do it. And that's basically what you guys are all about.
We are about win-win business with China. And, you know, the Chinese economy in the U.S. is so intertwined. Within the next 10 years, they're actually going to become the number one economy in the world. You know, we can't stop that.
No.
It's not a question of if we work with China, it's how. And that's what Grace and I
want to get it to the meat. Let's get to the meat of it. Let's pick some companies. Let's analyze, and we have two segments left here. Let's analyze what they've done to be successful, how it's benefited the United States, how it's a win-win for both. Join the conversation. We're talking about doing business in China. 860-9783, toll-free, 800-662-7979. Join the conversation. News Radio, 680, WPTF, WPTF.com. We're doing business with China. Kellen in Apex, you're joined the conversation. Welcome, Kellen. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Joe. I've only been able to listen intermittently, so I don't know if this topic has already been brought up, but when NAFTA happened, I believe that was a big change that really worsened our potential for jobs in the United States, and I don't think people think about that. And I really believe that if we could stop all of the, what do I call them, regulations that are so different from other countries, then businesses wouldn't have left. And I have a question for you. I don't know the answer. I'm curious if anybody can understand it. But the people who are marching everywhere and they're saying they want to be down with capitalism, well, do they know what the opposite of it is?
Yeah, it's China. Let's start with your first question, and Grace and Bryce here maybe can answer that. NAFTA's always been a sore topic, but let's talk about the positive aspects of doing business with China. How has NAFTA affected relationships with China?
Are you asking me?
No, I'm going to ask our guest here, Kellen.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can't speak too well to NAFTA. I mean, the China milestone is when they entered the WTO in 2001. That's kind of when they came onto the face of the earth with the huge economy. And, I mean, there are a lot of negatives. There are obviously job losses. We can't just gloss over that. But
we're not here to, we're not going to beat you guys up. You're not the reason that they moved over to China. Yeah. Your job here is to try to find a better way to do business with China that benefits us all, like you say, a win-win. And I'm certainly here to give you that this bully pauper to tell us about it. I think what she's concerned about, and a lot of people are concerned about, and it's really kind of it's a difficult question to answer, but talk about when China got in, and listen carefully to the conversation here, Kellen, and we'll try to answer your question. Talk about what happened in, 2002 with the World
2001. Trade? So, 1.3 billion people, their market just got opened up to us, and they have to follow the rules, more or less.
Okay.
And that's 1.3 billion people that we can deal with better than we could before, and that's a huge market. And if you just look at agricultural produce going out of North Carolina, you see that 500 million market the last year.
That's a huge market. I didn't realize that much was good for our farmers and our pork producers and our tobacco farmers. Let them smoke over there. Fine. Give them more tobacco.
And what we're selling them is chicken feet and parts of pigs that you probably don't even want to know are eaten in places. And so
they eat chicken feet over there. Grace, did you grow up with chicken feet? Come on, talk to me about this problem.
Yeah, I remember my former husband, when he went to Shanghai with me for the first time, he met my family and they were serving him chicken feet. So when you go there,
your former husband, Grace.
You have to smile a lot and move around the food a lot to make it look like you've eaten it. That's
my
what I've been
goodness.
Told.
Oh, man. All right, let's get to some specifics here, Bryce. Go ahead. Let's talk about some positive things that have happened with the relationship with China that's been a win-win.
Sure. Well, and I'll hand it over to Grace. I mean, she interviewed the top leadership.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, for instance, right here in North Carolina, just one example, Red Hat right now is about $1 billion run rate in their revenues, and they're projected to reach $3 billion within 5 years. And the fastest growth is coming from China. So China is definitely very important to companies here. And, of course, here it's not just unique to North Carolina. It's around the nation.
Now, Red Hat is computer software company?
They're an open source software company, right? So they're a publicly traded company, a large company not too far away from here. Actually, they're moving. They're right now in Centennial Campus in Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
And smaller companies, for instance, I think, Bryce, you mentioned GrandCrete, a smaller company that is a materials company. They, because of all the construction that's going on in China, they're a very important player. And this president told me that China projects can be 10 to 100 times larger than projects he has in the United States. So it's hugely important, and it could really swing his company's performance. Now, the challenge is, and that's one of the steps in the series that we talk about, is how you enter China and who you partner with. So they, because they're a smaller company, they have three different types of partners in the three different sectors that they provide services into. And because a lot of times, because of the legal infrastructure being different and negotiations starting after the contract is signed, sometimes the challenge is how to forecast accurately your revenue potential in China and then how to capacity plan around it. So that's one of the challenges. So they certainly are very active in China and host many delegations here, and they go there. The senior team goes there many times a year because the projects there are so much larger than what they could get here.
Is it easier for these companies? Let's say that I've got a company, okay, and I want to do some business in China, but, I'm just not why don't I just hire you to do all the negotiations and I'll just provide them with the stuff? I mean, is that to work like that?
Yeah,
or then they have to know me.
Right. Now, one of the steps we talk about is it's very important to, once you do have your strategy, once you have your market industry strategy, that's when you might want to hire consultants to do the market assessment. It's important to identify and invest in local talent once you have some things figured out. So up front, for instance, another small company, Plexigen, that is a healthcare company, and actually the founder is from China. He invested in market research on three ideas he had in China. And in two instances, the market research came out that it didn't make sense for them to pursue this in China. So he was happy that he invested, quote unquote, a lot of money to do the research, because then he didn't spend more research chasing a bad idea. And as I mentioned earlier, Burt's Bees, they hired a global consulting firm to help them figure out their overall global strategy. And then once they narrowed it down to China being one of the top priorities, there was a lot of assessment and work done before they hired the people.
All right, what do you guys do? Okay, I'm going to come to you. I got this idea. I want to sell widgets to Shanghai. So what are you going to do for me? What does your group do?
So we can help in several ways. For instance, if you already have a business in China and you're interested in figuring out how you can improve, just like here in the United States, we do audits of companies to understand their performance. As a third party, we go in because we're not vested in being in a company and having.
And you have
biases.
Access to China. They know you. They're okay with you. You speak Chinese. You're
so
Chinese.
We have partners on the ground in China who help us with activities that we need to have on the ground people. So that's important too. Just like what, as I said, is one of the steps we talk about for a company. It's important to invest and hire local talent. So we have people and partners in China who can help us have ear to the ground there. Now, upfront work, like the auditing process, that's something that we can do as a third party to go in and understand the situation using certain research methodologies that we've formulated over the years in our core practice as well. And then also what we can do is due diligence for people who are interested in doing investments in China. We can help as a third party do research and due diligence to make sure that what they're thinking about is the real deal, and we can make recommendations as a third party, the pros and cons of potential investments, for instance, for private equity firms that are interested in doing investments in China, which is something that a lot of private equity firms are doing. And actually, it's both ways. There's venture funds in China that are interested in buying assets here in America. They're interested in technology because, as we mentioned earlier, America is still considered and is the innovation hub. So it's bidirectional. It's doing business from here to China and China to here. So it's definitely not, it's not a one-way.
What about, when we hear about business in China, what about the workers over there? What is their, are things getting better for them? We hear all sorts of horror stories, Bryce.
Oh, sure.
You were there. Things getting better for them?
Definitely. 2008, January 1st, they signed a new labor law. And so, it's kind of like us in the 20s or maybe even the 10s in our industrialization kind of history. But, they got guaranteed wages, they got overtime, they got holidays. And actually, in some ways, they have these huge annual migrations for Chinese New Year. So they'll get 6 days, 7 days, 10 days off. A lot of the workers are migrant workers from the interior that go to the coastline and factories.
So there's nothing different there than goes on around here. Huh?
Yeah, and they get week-long holidays. When's the last time we got 7 days off? So
no, we don't get 7 days here, Bryce. No. We work 7 days.
Right. So there's a talent shortage, especially in senior management positions. So that's why, as I was saying earlier, we were talking about Chinese students wanting to come here to get Western training, which is viewed as superior. And definitely business schools are sprouting there. And there's joint ventures, for instance, here with Duke and UNC. They have affiliations and they're helping universities in China build and improve their MBA programs. And as we mentioned on the Tiger Mom Talk Show, I've taught in an MBA program, a joint venture with MIT at Fudan in Shanghai. So talent is scarce in China, so the people who are good, they're realizing they need to employ Western practices, HR practices, to retain their employees. And for instance, in the series, we talk about quintiles. They have a very high retention rate, and there's certain things that they do to continue training, to offer certain programs that make it attractive for the employee to stay at that company. So as you were asking, certainly Chinese ways of HR have improved over time because they just have to.
Yeah, and you're right. You think about that. If you're going to do business in the world, China and everybody else, everybody's going to have to figure out some common ground here. You can't operate Definitely. Like you used to operate. Yep, doing business in China, join the conversation, 860-9783, toll-free, 800-662-7979. I mean, Grace, you went to MIT, you went to Harvard. Is there any school I missed? Yale, Princeton? Did you go to Wake Tech? Grace, you got MIT and Harvard Business School, and so you're quite... Now, were you born here, Grace? Or you?
Yeah,
born?
I was born here, and just like on the Tiger Mom Talk Show...
You have a son, I know.
Yeah, I have a son, and he's
like
learning
a teenager.
He's 14, so yeah, I have the joys.
You're going through that.
The
huh?
joys of raising a teenager.
Yeah, well, we've all been through that.
And he's
not
actually,
you yet, Bryce. You're young. But.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that.
I'm giving Bryce some tidbits.
Well, you see this? This is what you need. See this right here? As I tell my son, there'll be a day you can take me, but today ain't that day.
So one thing here, my son has been. He's in his fourth year of studying Mandarin, and he's not unusual in that. So many parents now. Want their children to learn Mandarin because they know that it will give them a leg up as far as in the workforce because it's at some point it's most likely they're going to have to do or they're going to want to do business with China so certain or some kind of work with China so certainly having the language skills is very important.
I think my daughter's a teacher. Are they using a lot? Are they shipping a lot of teachers over to China or Americans to teach Chinese?
Oh, Americans that teach Chinese over there?
Like my daughter, she's a teacher. Mm-hmm. Would China be interested? I'm not trying to get
English,
her to
teach English. You mean
or whatever? Yeah.
Sure. I got my start teaching English over there, so that was great for me.
Did they pay you well and all that?
Definitely. Yeah.
Right. Because students there realize that in order for them to participate in the global economy, they've got to improve their English, and they have to have situations where they can use it. Rather than just being rote memorization.
And it's better to have somebody in English, an American, teach you English rather than, and it's better to me to learn Chinese from Grace than it is, from my brother-in-law who doesn't speak it.
Definitely.
All right, let's get Ed in here. Ed from Raleigh, welcome to the conversation. Ed, you doing business with China?
Trying to do a little business there, and I just thought I would ask Grace maybe to give a little additional information about how essential... arranging your business from the outset is, in other words, getting on the ground, understanding the politics, because at least my understanding is that politics still are very, very important in all of these different areas. So I thought maybe she could give background on that.
Well, let me just ask you a question, Ed. You are doing business with China or trying to do business with China?
I have done some business in China. Some of it has been more successful. There is a barrier of entry for most Westerners. So,
all right. Well, let's see what Grace. Do you know this gentleman?
Right. Thanks, Ed, for your call. So definitely having. So what I have found that has been helpful in, for instance, when I taught in China. It's important to have a bridge. So I'm, as you asked, Joe, I was born here in the United States, but I am Chinese-American, so I look Chinese, as you can tell here. Well, listeners can't tell.
No, really, Grace? You're really Chinese.
So it's important to have a bridge of someone who can look out for your interests and build those conversations, Ed, as you're asking, because we were talking earlier in the show about the government relations. So in, like, for instance, Burt's Bees having to have so many different conversations. So it is, it's not an easy process. So it is important to have the right people to help you have those conversations and even know which conversations to
Ed,
have.
Ed, where did you fail? We don't need details, but obviously you did some business, but you also failed. What happened? Why didn't it work for you, Ed?
The political situation is very dynamic in China, and I think one of the benefits clearly from having a child. The first time I did not have a Chinese American involved, mm-hmm. But notwithstanding whether they speak the language or not, there is a wariness. And so I think that Grace's ability to sort of cross cultures is, you know, very essential from my experience.
Obviously, she's making a career out of it. She can open the door where you can't.
Without a doubt. I mean, in time, there's no doubt that will come. I mean, they're moving very quick. But it's so vast, it appears to take time. And as you leave the major centers, I think, you know, Grace can certainly speak to, you realize quickly, culturally, it's 50 years behind. It's really the Cultural Revolution that we had post-war.
And Bryce Bryce said that in the first 3 minutes of this program and said, you got to remember.
I apologize.
And that's all right. You don't have to apologize for anything, Ed. I mean, I'm just bringing that up that we're going to take a break. Ed, you want to hold on here? I'm going to get back with Doing Business with China. Join the conversation, 860-9783, toll-free, 800-662-7979. Doing Business with China. Ed is our guest. He had a question for Grace about Ed's trying to do. So you were successful at one time doing some business in China, Ed?
Well, I've had a couple different opportunities, and what I've realized is that I think it really is essential that one has a Chinese-American partner.
All right, let's start. Bryce is going to answer this because he speaks Chinese. He lived in China. His wife is Chinese. And he works with Grace. So, I mean, what he's saying is you got to have somebody open up the door. They're just not going to talk to Ed or me.
Definitely. And, Ed, I can really sympathize with your position. I mean, I was there running an American ice cream truck company in Shanghai for a while. And I definitely had to build very local relationships, the government policy. You know, there are no ice cream trucks in Shanghai. So there was no policy. And so we had problems with that. So I really sympathize with your position, and I agree that it's a convoluted problem. Some people think of it as just, oh, China's different. Well, there's so many different parts to that difference. It's the cultural difference. It's the language barrier. It's the different cities, like you talked about, the interior being different from the coast, and even the cities on the coastline being different. So there are a lot of different problems, and you just need people on the ground. You need people you can trust, and you need those people to build very real relationships with the key people that are in government that have control over the policies that you're worried about.
Well, let me add, they have people on the ground in China. I mean, Grace will give you her website or her email if you want to talk to her about it. But I mean, I understand. What business, can you give us some broad example of what kind of business you're in, Ed?
Sure. In the real estate development business, and one of my initial forays was creating a luxury branded outlet mall in Beijing.
Okay, so you wanted to build a mall in Beijing with Gucci and I guess, I don't know, I'm just throwing out stuff.
Okay, you hit the nail on the head. And it is now open. But for a period of time, basically probably 6 months, notwithstanding the fact that we happen to have a Chinese-American partner who had traded there, it was really not until we aligned ourselves with a local entity that we were able to navigate as efficiently as we wanted. The layers of, and I'm sure that Grace can speak to this.
She's going to speak right now. Go ahead, Grace.
Yeah, so, right. So definitely the luxury area that you mentioned, the luxury area and the low end in China, there's a lot of people at both ends. So a McKinsey study talked about how that China currently is 20% of the global luxury sales, with $27 billion by 2015.
Wow.
And so the last series in the NNO, there's actually a picture of a woman and they're talking about a Prada show where they are looking to enter China because of the growth and size of the luxury market. But the way you do it has to be very, a very thoughtful way. For instance, Luxottica, they did put a design center on the ground in Shanghai to design eyewear, high-end eyewear that would fit with a Chinese face. So you have to understand your consumer, and you have to put facilities on the ground more than just a sales office. And then, Ed, to your point, in the beginning stages to set up all that, certainly you have to have the right partners who can be bridge building and on the ground to really help with all those challenges and working with the government.
Yeah, this has been a good call, Ed, and I tell you, and I appreciate your call because you really kind of gelled this whole program together. We were kind of fishing out there, but you kind of brought it right home. So what you're basically saying, Ed, that this mall was built, but if you had done it by, maybe I'm not saying that Grace was the answer in the beginning, but somebody like Grace to start this process out would have been a lot smoother for you, a lot more successful, and would have saved you some money.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think we're all,
about navigating.
Yeah, you know, because we're Americans, you know, Ed, and you're probably, you don't sound like you're originally from the South like I am, and we just operate. We just go, right, Ed? Midwesterners, Northerners, we just move fast, get it done. You know, when I came down south in 1980, you know, they don't call you back, you know, like they do up north, you know. They're just, well, we're going to have some tea, it's a little hot, I'll call you next week. They never call. So I know where you're at. I don't have a lot of patience either, but if you want to do business in China, Ed, that's great. So the mall is open, and you're part of this deal? Is that right?
The mall is open. It's in a place called Wujing, which is between Beijing and Tianjin. It's the only stop of a bullet train between those two cities, and it sits across from the station. But, I mean, there were a series of months, notwithstanding doing all the right things. I think, you know, the folks that you have with you are invaluable in this process.
Well, we're running. Well, they've done it, Ed, and I appreciate it. Grace, right. Bryce, give out some information about your company while we got a minute here. Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ed.
How do you get in contact with you guys?
Yeah, if people are interested in getting information, for instance, that white paper, they can write to China at savvymarketinggroup.com. So our website is savvymarketinggroup.com. It's SAVVY marketinggroup.com.
And you put Grace at Savvy Marketing Group or Bryce at Savvy Marketing Group.
Yep.
The emails will get to them. So, Ed, if you've got questions or anybody else, let's make an appointment to do this again in about 30 or 60 days. We'll see where we're at. Maybe we'll bring in some people that have done some business and we'll expand it. I'm sorry this hour went so fast. We appreciate you guys being here, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Thank you. Doing business in China. We're going to check on the Republic, make sure it's still standing.